Hey, what's up, everybody? What's up, mi gente? This is Benjamin, and welcome to another episode of Latinx Greek Life, your Find Your Purpose podcast. Here we are, second episode, second part of this movement. And today, I have an organization that dates back more than 100 years. If last week we had the first ones, today we have the oldest. So if you don't know who they are, you're going to learn a little bit about them today. And who am I talking about? I'm talking about Phi Iota Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. All right, so let's get to know them a little bit. Phi Iota Alpha Fraternity Incorporated was established on December 26, 1931 at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, but its roots are more than 100 years old. The fraternity's roots extend from the late 19th century to the first Latino fraternity and the first Latino student organization in the United States. Their brotherhood is composed of university and professional men committed towards the empowerment of the Latin American community. They do not have traditional founders, but they have fraternal pillars, as its establishment is the result of three Latino student organizations coming together for one purpose. They look up to important Latin American figures in their roles in freeing their people, such as Simón Bolívar, José de San Martín, Bernardo O'Higgins, Benito Juárez, and José Martí. They do this also by providing social, cultural programs and activities geared towards the appreciation, promotion, and preservation of Latin American culture. My guest today is Marvin Ríos. He is the son of immigrants from Lima, Peru, and is senior at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, studying chemical engineering. He's a passionate leader within his community, in and outside of school, and attributes this to his time with Phi Iota Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. He's been a brother since the fall of 2016 and has been heavily involved since. It is with great honor and respect I also bring to you today a little bit about the Fiotas. Check it out. Thank you so much, Marvin, for joining me in the second episode of Latinx Greek Live. Let's go ahead and get to know you a little bit. Like, let's go ahead and talk about your educational journey. What college are you currently attending, and what's your major?
Hey, Benjamin. Thanks for having me again. My name is Marvin Ríos, and I'm a chemical engineering major at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. It's one of the oldest engineering schools. It actually is the oldest engineering school in the United States, and it's home to the Alpha chapter of Phi Iota Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Nice, nice. Are you? I did not know, by the way, that was the oldest institution for engineering. Are you first generation? Like, where's your family from? Like, were you born here? Like, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I'm a first gen, half gen, you know, I think the terminology like is swung here and there. But at the end of the day, like my parents are from Lima, Peru. They came here to the United States, to Atlantic City, New Jersey, and that's where I come from. Born and raised there my entire life, and now I go to school in upstate New York. But yeah, that's kind of where I come from. I played a lot of soccer growing up. I grew up in Atlantic City, so nice. Grew up along the casinos, along the beach. it was a good time.
Do you have any siblings? Are you the oldest?
So let's see. I actually come from quite a big family, right? So I'd say like I'm on the upper middle end. I'm actually a twin. Wow. And I have an older sister, an older brother. I have a stepsister who's just a few years younger than me, and then I have a younger sister and younger brother as well. And the age range is really, really vary. There's a big age gap between us, but we do what we can. We love each other. Really come from a really big family.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And okay, so when you mentioned like half first gen, whatnot, so you, like your older siblings, did they attend college?
Yeah, my older sister did attend college. She was born in Peru. And when she came here, she did attend Rowan University out in New Jersey. She wasn't like super involved on her campus, I'd say. I saw her like come back a few times, like pretty often, and I don't think she was too involved with stuff like Latinx Greek life, you know. But she was a big help to me.
That's awesome. And okay, so take us to the time entering your campus as a Latino student, Latinx student. Did you find it difficult to find a space on campus where you felt comfortable being yourself and, you know, being in a community like that?
I think the best way to describe going to college for the first time to me was it felt like I was walking on eggshells everywhere. I felt like I had to watch the way I was talking, the way I looked, the way I acted in front of everybody, because I come from a very cultural background. Like, you don't see too many Peruvians, and I come from a community where there was a ton. I had a ton of friends from various different countries where they were born. They are born here. Their families were born wherever. In my high school, the friends I had were just, I mean, not to put it like this, but like I came from a really cultured high school, really diverse. And now the school I go to was predominantly white. And I got to say that it was hard. Like the first month, I think that I was trying much harder than I should have to fit in a place that I really shouldn't have to feel that way, right? I should have really felt that I could be myself. And it took me a while to find people that I could be myself around and feel comfortable around.
I definitely connect with what you're sharing because I come from Salinas, California. So it's a very, I would say, heavy on the Latinx community there. It's a large immigrant community, predominantly Mexican. My family's Mexican too, so definitely connecting, being in growing up in that community. Pros and cons, whatever, but it's where I'm from, you know? And then moving to San Jose, which is just an hour north, San Jose is pretty diverse too. There's a large Latinx and Vietnamese and Asian community as well. However, San Jose State, on the other hand, I did find myself in spaces where I just didn't feel comfortable around folks, and even if there were Latinx folks, I still felt like a big disconnection, because either they were maybe from like SoCal or the Bay Area or Northern California, and it was like this lack of connection because of where I'm from. Once I started meeting people from like Salinas or the surrounding areas where I'm from, the 831, then I felt a little bit more comfortable. Like, oh wow, like there's more people who come from where I'm coming from. Like not just Latinx folks from anywhere, but Latinx folks from where I'm from. So I definitely connect with what you're saying. And how did you balance school, work, and life being freshman in college?
How didn't I, man? I think first things first, right? Like I didn't conquer it when I came in. I think I came in and I didn't know what classes I was like really applying, like signing up for. I knew I needed a job and I was trying to figure that out, but I was doing everything by myself. I had so many questions and I was like, well, I'm going to figure it out by myself. The only other person I had was actually my twin brother. We actually go to the same school and we were kind of just bouncing questions off of each other. Like we both had the same questions and no idea how to figure them out, right? Mm. And it wasn't until that I went to, you know, one of our campus organizations. I showed up one day to Alianza Latina, which is like the Latinx social club. And I told myself, I'm a little nervous. Like, I don't know if I can like entirely relate to these people. I had a strong feeling that it was going to be primarily Puerto Rican, Mexican, and Dominican, because we're in New York. And I was like, am I going to fit in? Am I like going to clearly stand out? And I met somebody who kind of noticed I was new. And he was like, hey, like, how you doing? Like, you're new to the whole college thing, huh? And I was like, yeah, I'm like really struggling right now. And he was like a very big guide to me at the time. He helped me drop some classes, add some classes, put me in classes with friends he had, made sure that I wasn't doing something that wouldn't let me graduate on time. Made sure that I was also taking classes And loading myself in a sense that I wouldn't be so panicked. Like my first semester said, why are you taking like chemistry, you know, put that off, or, you know, like giving me like good advice and showing me how to do it. And I think that was kind of the first step in learning how to balance school, work and life, right? Is to find people who've already managed it and don't be afraid to reach out. That was something that, I still find myself struggling to this day. I think that it's like just a little bit like in our culture, it can feel a little masculine to like just figure it out on your own, you know? But it's always okay to like reach out and ask for help, because sometimes that's the only way you'll really get further, no matter how hard you try.
That's true. I am plus one to that, plus 100. Normally at work, when we agree with someone on Zoom, we just put like a little plus one. Oh yeah, like plus one, you know, liking that comment. Definitely, I agree with you. The mentorships or finding mentors on campus, whether they're classmates, professors, or advisors or whatnot, like that's huge. That's huge, especially for Latinx folks, like finding that space, again, that comfortable space, that person who can guide us. I think there's definitely nothing wrong with that, that student organizations can provide, especially that when we transition into fraternity conversation, definitely fraternities provide that as well. So now let's go ahead and jump in to the fraternity conversation. So why? How and why did you decide to get involved in a fraternity organization? How did that happen?
Well, I'll say that one is like a bit of a journey, right? I think coming in, all I really knew about Greek life, fraternity life, sorority life was what I saw in the movies. You know, all I knew is that there were parties, you know, they did a lot of drinking, it could be dangerous. And I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like I'm a bit of a partier myself. And, you know, that first week of college, that's all I saw. I saw parties everywhere I was going. And I said, this is how they live. Like, this is what they do all the time. Like, I'll show up, but I'll never really be a part of this kind of thing. It wasn't until like, I knew I was looking for something to do in college. I think like within like those first 2 weeks, I was like, this is going to be a place where I'm learning. I'm going to learn to grow right now, and I need to find out where it is I'm going to grow. And I reached out to that mentor I first had, right? I told him like, hey, like, you know, like, what are some things I can do on this campus? Like, I'm trying to like, feel like I fit in. I want to belong somewhere. And I want to be like you, right? Like, you know, you came in, you saw me, I looked new, and you said, hey, here's a hand. You know, I want to be that kind of person. You know, how do I get there? And, you know, he was telling me, he was like, oh, like, you know, first things first, let's make some friends, calm down, you know, slow down. Let's make sure you're all settled in first. And he was kind of like my mentor and guide and walked me everywhere. I would always try to run into him, eat lunch with him. And it wasn't until one day I saw him interacting with a bunch of other people, and it almost looked like the relationship I had with him. I was like, it looks like these are older guys, and they're like messing with him, they're hugging with him, and they're telling him it's going to be okay, what? And they were all wearing these fraternity letters. And I said, oh, like maybe they're trying to get him to join. And I asked him about it. I was like, oh, like, you know, who are those people? Like, who are those people? And he was like, oh, those are my brothers. I'm a part of fraternity on campus. And I said, oh, like, what's that like? And, you know, he told me more about Phi Iota Alpha. Little did I know at the time that was going to be like my home away from home now. He brought me to the guys. He introduced me. I slowly realized I started to recognize all these guys. Like one of them was the president of the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. One of them was, most of them were on the executive board for different Latino clubs. And they were the other people that were walking around helping new kids like me. And I said, okay, I want to be that. I want to be that kind of guy. And if this is what it takes, like, that's what I want to do. And I told him, you know, I got to meet more of them. And of course, the rest is history, really.
That's so cool, man. Like, I think that was sounds like a smooth transition from becoming, just being a student at your university to becoming a brother of your organization. And it's what the cool thing about it is like many people don't get to have that type of process, you know, like that experience like you. Like many people just get recruited. Sometimes you don't know where you're going into. And then you start the process. You become a new member, a pledge, whatever you want to call it. And that sometimes it might be a little culture shock for sure. For me, like my experience was somewhat like that. Like I didn't really know what I was going to do, what I was getting myself into. But honestly, like what you were telling me, it's really cool. Like you got to know them before. And then you're like, you know what? I want to join this organization. I think these guys are awesome, what they are about. I know them already a little bit more on a personal level. I want to join, right? So like you knew what you were getting yourself into in a sense, at least who you were joining, not necessarily like the process itself. So super cool, man. So when did you join?
It was that same semester. My first semester freshman year is where I really went guns blazing, you know, like I think like I got to know like more of the guys. I think they had some recruiting events, but it didn't always align with like when I wanted to go. And I just got to meet as much of them as I could. It just so happened that they had a lot of like a big alumni thing happening. And I met a lot of alumni and people were introducing me here left and right. And although I hadn't gone to any maybe like recruiting events they had, I pretty much told them, I was like, hey, like, I don't know what the next steps are, but, and maybe you're going to tell me to wait, but I want it, you know, I'm here, like, I want it to happen now, you know, I'll do what it takes, and I was put, I mean, I went through my pledging experience, of course, and from there, I have seven line brothers, we call them. We were a line of eight total, one of the biggest in, like, our chapters, like, I think the Northeast in general, it tends to be much smaller chapters, and that's probably the biggest line we've seen to this day, at least for like during my time here, right? but it was, man, yeah. What a journey, right?
yeah, definitely. I mean, I worked at a Greek Life office before, and some of the recommendations we normally would tend like to tell students is to kind of like explore their first year in college and not necessarily join right away, because, you know, there's like that culture shock of being in college. At the same time, like, you're adapting to something new, and going into a Greek organization could be a lot, no, for someone who just started college. So we tend to normally say, like, I normally say, you know, take that first year to explore and adapt. And the second year, your sophomore year, your third semester in, join something. Check it out. Explore. If you're deciding to join, go for it. Because you feel like the idea is for you to have been already adapted to the campus and everything. But your experience was different. No, you join as a freshman, first semester, boom. There you are. And when you became a brother, did you hold any positions? How was that like?
Let's see. When I first became a brother and I was a neo, right? There was, I think a total of, I think 14 active brothers at the time, ourselves included. Most of them were very old. I think there was five ready to graduate at the time. And then another, the other five, there weren't too many, I guess, like sophomores at the time. So most of them were like upperclassmen, third and fourth years now. So a lot of them weren't ready to, they kind of just wanted to like pass on the reins. They said, okay, like we need you guys to be as involved as you can. And excuse me, lucky for us, like everybody was like, kind of like you said, like really willing, jumping in. I think I held one position. I think I was the like public relations chair. So I just managed our Instagram. And then I held like another, I'd say like pretty important position that I thought like would change my life at the time. Or it did change my life at the time and my perspective on a lot of things. And that was the assistant pledge master. So we had a senior who was coming round two on, you know, the new member educator role, as most people might know it. And I was coming in as his assistant, which is just as equal and as crucial. And it was quite the experience, right? I will say that in retrospect, I don't think I had like the time or the settling in to have done that just yet. But I will say that it was an amazing experience that let me have a a different perspective to the fraternity much earlier on than most of my brothers.
That's an awesome experience right away, being freshman, a NEO, and assisting the pledge educator, pledge master, whatever we call it. Now everyone calls it differently.
Yeah.
I never got that experience to be a pledge educator. I always felt like I wanted to, like it wasn't something that interested me. However, I took a different path. I became the rep for my organization to our council, and then I became social chair, mm-hmm. and then president, et cetera, et cetera. No, so like I think each one gave me a different skill that I still use today. Like I feel like my social skills got a little stronger because of that chair position. Presidency gave me the confidence to be a leader, to be able to like speak up and share my knowledge or my voice in a room. And being a rep, just being able to connect with other folks who, you know, who are from other organizations, etc. And I think each one has had, each position in an organization has its value and its worth. So I really encourage all those listening out there who are still within Greek Life or thinking of potentially joining something to get involved within the organization, not just becoming a member, but becoming a leader within the organization. So take us back, like what other positions did you hold?
After that, I realized that my main focus, right, wasn't necessarily, I think that I could have done a lot to change the fraternity, but I recognized there were other brothers who were like definitely more suited for those roles. Like, you know, one who was like, you know, I think I can like really communicate with other organizations. Like we'll be on road trips all the time. One said, you know, I have some really good ideas to make sure that we always have funds to do what we need. I think like being in that like mentor role, right? I've held a good amount of the positions, except for like maybe like president or vice president. But one of my key things was I wanted to always be a part of recruiting. You know, I was always about like, who are we bringing in? You know, let's make sure that like, we got some good heads coming in. And also like, you know, let's make sure that we're like, you know, at the end of the day, if we don't recruit them, let's make sure that they're doing okay, right? Like, let's check up on everybody that we end up talking to. Make sure that just because they're not on the path to be our brothers, they're on the path to something. Because we're going to go to the same school, they're going to be our friends, we're going to continue communicating no matter what. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to be that that recruiting chair most of the time. And then I was like the social chair for a long time as well. I love talking to people. I'm a bit of a social butterfly. Yeah. My social circles expand everywhere on this campus now. And I knew my place was kind of just like, all right, I'll do the work out here. You guys got it inside the house, inside the fraternity. And then from there, nice. You know, again, my focus was on bringing these new people, right? I was the, and then I was the pledge master, new member educator, whatever you may call it. One more time, right? And that was yes,
like that.
Yeah, the actual and we held the first new member presentation that we had in our chapter's history, I think in like 10 years. You know, I had a good group of guys. I'm so proud of them. Uptown Spring 18, if they hear this, I just want them to know, gotta know every, always have to know everybody, let everybody know how much I love them, right?
Yeah, shout out to them. Like as I mentioned earlier, I did not become a pledge educator, pledge master, or whatever we call it. But I think that, and I'm a strong believer that the pledging process, so the process to become a brother or sister or whatnot, is huge in the success of the organization and the success of that person, of that member, to feel and become successful. It's the tools that are established within that process. Mm-hmm. that person is going to be taken into the organization, and not to mention like moving forward in their life, no? So it's tremendous important to not haze, to keep treat them with respect, and to give them, as I mentioned, the skills to that when they become like a brother or a sister, they could be the future of the organization. And sometimes it's not like that, being completely honest. Many organizations still believe keeping it old school, or, oh, that's not how I pledged, or you all have it a little easier than us. It's not about that, man. Like, so it's about like just developing the members to become, you know, successful, because that person is going to be your brother, your sister, and family. You treat them with respect. I make a connection with what you're saying about how you entered the organization with that brother of yours who was mentoring you and guiding you even before you became a brother. And I feel like that influenced you to, when you became a brother, to do the same. You know, like the positions that I'm hearing that you were holding or that you held served as a type of mentorship to your brothers, even without being like president or whatnot, you know? Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%, you got it. That role of like a guide or a mentor isn't like, I mean, like I said, it's one that I sought out, but it's also one that just kind of like fell on my lap. To this day, like, you know, I haven't been super involved as like the president or the vice president per se, but I'm also someone that works with them so much that it just feels like I'm a part of it, right? It's someone that I tell them, like, hey, is there a situation? Like, is there confrontation involved? Like, what do we need to do together? I think that's the case at most of our organizations, right? It's not one person. Like, we're brothers or sisters.
You know how they always say that if one of us fall, we all fall?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that you don't have to be president of your organization to make a huge impact on the rest of your brothers or sisters. I know it's just a title, but honestly, that position does not make the person. It's the person itself, like their character and what they're about. You know, like I've seen many folks be president or hold certain positions and they just simply don't really care. And I've seen other members who are not necessarily in the highest positions within the organization, but it's like that person that everyone leans on, you know, like they hold like this like vibe, that energy that people just feel like, you know what, I feel comfortable trusting this person. So I think that it's something that's very interesting to analyze with you right now. And during my experience as a brother, I felt like even though I did hold positions that like presidency and whatnot, I still felt like I was able to build community with my brothers, even with I was outside of the organization or didn't have the highest positions. So once again, like mentorship can be at any level, honestly. But I mean, let's go ahead and transition to a little bit of the sauce in this conversation. Let's talk about the history of the Fiota, like the Fiota history. Can you tell me like where were the organization established, when? Just give us a little bit about that.
Awesome. So the Fiota history, I will say, is something that I think people are always interested in, right? Especially if you're already in Latinx Greek life. For us, you know, the date we will always claim, the date that is, you know, the one and only, right? Especially here at the Alpha Chapter, December 26, 1931 is what we call our establishment day. That is when we are established. We are a merger between, you could say two, you could say three, but historically multiple different organizations. The oldest one dating back to 1898, which was the La Unión Hispanoamericana, which was a secret organization at the time, in various different organizations, but also founded at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, or RPI. From there, the rest is history, right? Like, we were just known as Latino-based fraternity, maybe not to the mantra or the idea that we see Latinx Greek life now, but we were a Latinx-based fraternity back then, one that was creating history, one that was really paving the way in different, we have brothers who became presidents of Panama, Colombia, some politically powerful people at the time. And it wasn't until the brink of, I think, the time of World War II, where college admissions was low in general, especially for all minority populations. There was just a big drought in like that diversity. There was already a lack of diversity at the time for sure, but when that happened, anybody who wasn't privileged enough to go to college really couldn't go. You know, it was all about like war at the time. And that's where you'll see a gap. At the time, Phi Beta Alpha, as it was, ceased to exist for maybe 20 years. It was around like the late 50s. And then from there, there was just chapters that just slowly couldn't keep up the numbers. The schools weren't supporting them. There was just an all-out American effort on the war. From there, our, you know, our historic brothers, some of which, you know, still alive to this day, right? You know, they did their own thing. They went, they kind of kept the fraternity to themselves. They didn't go back. You know, they were starting their lives as Latino men still in what was a scary world, right? And then we have fraternities like Lambda Theta Phi who came in and they started. I will give them that. No beef here, but they were the first in a time of like, hey, like, you know, we need to start like our own kind of Greek life, Latinx Greek life. And, you know, they were just one of the many dominoes to fall. From there, I think Lambda Theta Phi, you know, some brother out there can correct me and call me out, but I believe they were founded sometime like in the late 1975. Okay, yeah. I was thinking like 78, 76, something like that. And then from there, we saw many others, right? One of which being Phi Beta Alpha's refounding, also here at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. And we were founded in the spring of 1984. A group of men who saw that, you know, there was, you know, Latina Greek life at the time. They said, well, you know, we don't fit in here. Like, what is there? And, you know, they were doing their research and they ended up finding old archives. Who knew that that group of men would end up finding archives of the oldest Latino fraternity in existence at their own school. From there, they made every effort. They reached out to, you know, older brothers. They got the information they could, and they made it happen. They made everything happen. I think like we were blowing up everywhere. I think in the moment we were refounded. We were also refounding, you know, our Beta, Gamma, Delta chapter, everything. You know, we were making sure that Phi Beta Alpha was like, not only were we starting back, we were coming back, but we were coming back strong as ever. And you know, there's the discrepancy, right? we were refounded at the end of the day, or reestablished at the spring of 1984, but our roots date back. The first official establishment of what we know as Phi Beta Alpha, December 26, 1931. Our history goes even further back, but you know, there it is.
Well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of the history of the Fiota history. And I also want to acknowledge that you mentioned Lambda Theta Phi. I think there's been, as I started this podcast and reaching out to folks, I started seeing, okay, who came first? No, like I honestly didn't know. So I looked into some websites and started seeing that there was actually a dilemma going on, no? Like who came first? Was it Lambda Theta Phi? Was it the Fiotas? Like, people argue here and there, well, this, well, that. And honestly, like, I'm not here to say who or what or who's right, who's wrong. I honestly, as a member of another Latinx organization, Latino-based fraternity, I'm honestly grateful and I love history and I'm grateful for these organizations to have been established whenever that is, no? Whenever they were established. Because now I get to be, you know, having a podcast like this and be a member of something greater. And it would have been possible, at least, if it would have started somewhere. And I think whether you're a Fiota, whether you're LT5, I think at the end of the day, it's the movement, it's the history, it's the purpose of this. And throughout this podcast season and episodes that I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be hearing history of each organization. And each organization is going to mention, you know what, there was something missing, and that's why we established X, Y, and Z. No, and I think that's valid. And I think there's so much like pride that we should have that all these organizations were established and they represent us in one way and another, like our cultura. And I think that's what makes it such more exciting for me to continue this process. So I really appreciate you acknowledging that. And yeah, man, so let's go ahead and talk about a little bit of like the ideology of the Fiotas. So how does your organization promote the ideals of Pan-Americanism?
Pan-Americanism, man. I think it's like a word we toss around a lot, and especially if you do just a little bit of research on, being a fiota, right? You'll see that word. But it's, I say toss around, but it's not one we take lightly, right? I think it's something that impacts, while we're, learning about ourselves, while we're, while we're brothers, right? It's something that we just continuously learn. What does Pan-Americanism really mean? If you're looking at a basic definition, right, it may say like kind of like unifying various different cultures of Latin America. But culture expands, right? Like this is like a unification of people not only from South America, Central America, the Caribbean, for example. This is a unification of people like everywhere in the Americas, whether I'm in California, Texas. If I'm, if I meet a fellow Latino, there's something that bonds us. And it's going to be, whether we know it or not, it's our ancestral roots. You know, our people have been through, colonization. We've suffered like many different histories. At the end of the day, that's something that should like build a bond that makes us stronger so that we can, fight for the future together. Whether that's, bonding culturally, socially, economically, politically, we have to have our hand in hand, whether it's understanding each other's cultures, like if you listen to, salsa, bachata, other music, right? Like all Latinos are a little different, and we have to understand that. And we also have to understand, some of us may have lived in the United States a little longer and we're a little better off, or we're a little better off in, a country like Argentina. Maybe our family's been around for a long time and, they're on like an upper class. Like we have to lend that helping hand out, socially, politically, economically, culturally, in every aspect we can. And that's something that I think every one of our brothers has kind of like taken akin to like our own ideologies, right? Like always try to understand where we're each other's coming from, beyond just culturally, and help each other out.
That's pretty cool. Like your organization, the ideology of that. Over here in the West Coast and my organization, it's a little bit different because predominantly over here in the West Coast, you see the majority of like Latinx communities being Mexican. You have also a little bit of like Centroamericanos, Salvadorians, Honduran, etc. But the majority, it's always Mexican. So I grew up being in communities and spaces where the majority of the brown folks around me were Mexican, and I wasn't really exposed to other folks. And I think that's not a good thing, porque not everyone that has a last name, Latino last name or Latinx last name, is Mexican, and that's a given fact. And I know that in the East Coast, you have a little bit more like diversity with, Puerto Rican, Cubano, Dominicano, Colombiano, etc. Right? Like it's a little bit more diverse. And over here, it's not. So in fraternity aspect, like a lot of my brothers are from Mexican descent, right? Like their parents are from Mexico. We may have here and there a brother who's from El Salvador, etc., and or who may not be Latinx. Like we have a multicultural background now, and we are definitely recruiting members who are outside of just Latinx, and that's awesome as well. Be like we have Portuguese, etc., etc. And I think what's missing within our organization is that many times we try to do events that promote just not just Latinx culture, but just simply the Mexican culture. Like if we're gonna have an event, oh, let's have a banda, because that's what we all listen to. No, wait, hold up. That's not what everyone listens to. We may have a couple brothers who don't listen to that. That's not part of them, And why do they have to be forced to adapt to us, and rather instead of us being more open to the diversity of our brotherhood? And but yeah, I think that's something that I really appreciate you sharing, because something that we can all learn from. At least I can. All right, man. So getting closer to the end here. So I have a really important question, Marvin. What does being a brother of Phi Iota Alpha fraternity feel like?
Being a fiota for me means being, honestly, it means being family, right? it's something that we stress so much, as I'm sure many other organizations do as well. but we try to be that family away from home. I think I look at these brothers of mine every day, and I always tell myself, man, I don't know if I'd still be here without you guys. Like, I don't know if I could have done college without you guys. And I think that's something that, you know, whether, you know, we have brothers who do the most they can for the fraternity, you know, maybe just inside the fraternity working on us. And we have brothers who are always working on, like, the community itself. I think I've never been so, I wouldn't be as involved as I am now, man. I've done, if you were to meet anybody at the school, you mentioned my name, they'll be like, what has that kid not done? Can this kid just go to sleep? I think if it wasn't for being around such inspirational and hardworking people, I wouldn't be so motivated to be doing everything I can and taking every advantage that I can. I think that that's what makes a fiota fiota, right? Being a family, we're constantly, if you meet any fiota, I think one of the things that any one of them will say, at least up here in the Northeast, is we know how to express ourselves. You'll see brothers who love talking all the time because that's all we do with each other. We try to keep ourselves openly communicative. The most artistic people I've ever seen up here. I'm always meeting a brother who wants to start some kind of music career, you know, who's an artist in their own kind of way. I think almost every brother is just like a secret poet and they haven't told anybody. And then from there, it's also like just, you know, such motivational people. I think when I first met a couple brothers from other chapters, they told me they were, you know, off the bat, like the first person I met was like the president of their multicultural Greek council or the Latino Greek council. And, you know, even at this school too, like, you know, I've tried to be involved. I was the president of a couple of other organizations. I really tried to make my, you know, I wanted people to know, like, this is what it means to be a fiota. If you're looking at me and you see me up there, and, you know, you want to be up there with me, that's, you know, you're going to have to be a fiota. Because you'll see the rest of us are up at the top too. You know, leading our Latinx community, speaking up for them, whether it's, you know, something that's going on in the world or at the school, you know, we're there. And it's something that I'm extremely proud of.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for sharing your experience. A little bit about you, because I definitely connect on a lot of things with you. We are definitely aligned in our vision with Greek life, even though we may be from two different time zones, East Coast, West Coast. Family's Peruvian, mine's Mexican. We're two different organizations, but at the end of the day, I think we believe in similarities of, like, our nuestra cultura and Greek life, and I think it's awesome, and, like, I think what you were saying, it speaks to me a lot, because what folks see in movies, it's not reality. You know, what those movies are portraying are white organizations, to be completely blunt. And if you see, like, other MPHC organizations being portrayed, like, for the most part, like, Santa Yard or whatnot, like, yeah, those are cool. Like, that's, like, you can see, like, the tradition, the culture aspect of it, the history. You know, like, our organizations have a lot of that. Like, we embrace cultura, our community, academics, leadership, everything, no? So I'm so grateful that you came onto this podcast and shared a little bit about that, because voices like yours need to be heard. I know you're not a founding father or whatnot like my previous guest, but I still think your voice matters and your voice is important. Because students like today, like students in 2021 are going to be listening to this. 2022, who knows, right? But students in high school, I don't know. Hopefully the whole world listens to this. But I think it's important for folks to see, like, what does it feel like to be in an organization in this age? Like, my involvement in my organization was like 10 years ago, even though I'm a brother for life, no? But all, I'm not active anymore. I'm an alum, and things change, you know, these new generations and stuff. So transitioning to that, to my last question for you, to wrap it, says, take us home with, if you could provide one advice to the Latina, Latino, Latinx student in college right now, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to kind of like reach out to people. I think it's, at least for me, it was a little intimidating. I think when you first leave, especially going to college, you're going to feel like you're surrounded by a bunch of people from many different backgrounds. But you have to remember, right? Like, you're coming in college and it's a place to learn and grow and change so much in your life. You're going to be building backgrounds with new people, and that's a it's okay that it's okay to be different from everybody else. Everybody's feeling the same way. Just remember that you're going to be you're building those backgrounds to feel close, because you will look back on this one day and say, wow, this is my new background. It's going to college here and meeting these people.
Thank you so much, Marvin, once again for joining me in this movement. As I reflect on this second episode and talking to Marvin, I think about like the privilege that I have and the excitement that I have in still bringing more episodes about Greek life, about Latinx Greek life. It's so awesome. I'm just a guy from the West Coast, born and raised in Salinas, California, thinking that, you know, I can make an impact in my community, and I hope this is part of it, you know? I hope it is, because I'm over here learning about the history, the people that make up something so extraordinary that changed my life. Therefore, I don't just want to bring founding fathers or founding mothers into this space. Obviously, I do. But I also want to bring younger generations, such as Marvin, to talk about how something so extraordinary came into his life and impacted his life, and what has done for him till today. So be in the lookout for the next episodes, because it will have, you never know, it might have a founding father, a founding mother, it might have someone who joined 20 years ago, or it might have someone who's still currently active and still currently in college. So stay in the lookout for the next episode. Thank you so much, Marvin. Thank you so much for everybody who's shown the love and support. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, La Familia Unida es Invencible.